This is KYUK Public Radio for the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. I'm Greg Kim. Wildfire has started on the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. A fire that started 3 miles from Napaimute took out 80 acres on Friday. Five firefighters initially flew in by helicopter, but the fire had grown to 45 acres by the time they arrived. An additional 28 firefighters were sent over the next day to help contain the blaze. No damage was reported. Firefighters believe humans caused the fire, but it's still under investigation. Next, in fishing. Subsistence families along the Kuskokwim River can mark their calendars for upcoming fishing openings. KYUK's Anna Rose MacArthur reports.
For the federal waters of the Yukon Delta National Wildlife Refuge, there will be a 12-hour set net opening on Saturday, June 8th from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. For the set net opening on June 8th, set nets on the Kuskokwim River main stem must be attached to the bank and oriented perpendicular to the river. The nets must be 6-inch or less mesh, may not exceed 45 meshes in depth or 60 feet in length in the water, and may not be operated more than 100 feet from the ordinary high water mark. Gill nets are prohibited during this opening. However, gill nets will be allowed during the following openings. There will be a 12-hour gill net opening on Wednesday, June 12th, Saturday, June 15th, and Wednesday, June 19th from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. Gill nets are restricted to 6-inch or less mesh, 45 meshes in depth. Net lengths may not exceed 25 fathoms or 150 feet from the Johnson River to the refuge boundary at Aniak. Net lengths may not exceed 50 fathoms or 300 feet from below the Johnson River to the Kuskokwim River mouth. Other fishing methods like rod and reel, dip nets, fish wheels, and beach seines remain open to the harvest of all fish, including king salmon and the Kuskokwim main stem. Kings caught in this gear on the main stem in the refuge, even outside an opening, can be kept. However, salmon spawning tributaries are closed to gill nets and to king salmon harvest, including the Eek, Kasigluk, Kizaralik, Tuluksak, Aniak, and the Gweethluk, starting at its confluence with the Kuskokwok Slough. The old Kuskokwok Slough, where the Kizaralik and Kasigluk drain, is also closed. No kings may be taken from these tributaries. All other tributaries in the refuge are open, beginning 100 yards from where they meet the Kuskokwim. Another closed area is what's referred to as the Aniak Box, an area stretching from the Aniak runway to the refuge boundary where salmon are known to mill. Also on Saturday, June 8th, state managers with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game have announced a subsistence fishing opening. It is also for a 12-hour opening from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. for set gill nets on the Kuskokwim main stem from the Kuskokwim River mouth to the Halitna River mouth. Within the refuge, the state opportunity applies to Alaska residents living outside the Kuskokwim area who want to fish in the refuge. The state opening restricts set nets to 4-inch or less mesh and requires nets to have an attached keg or buoy with the fisherman's first initial, last name, and address written on it. The state also requires any king salmon caught by non-Kuskokwim area residents with rod and reel, dip nets, fish wheels, and beach seines to be returned to the water alive. In Bethel, I'm Anna Rose MacArthur.
And finally, the Dunleavy administration's decision to defer to EPA over safe levels of PFAS chemicals in drinking water came at the direction of the governor's top aides. As Coast Alaska's Jacob Resnick reports, critics raised questions whether the decision was based on science or politics.
In Kelly McLaughlin's house, the drinking water sits in 5-gallon jugs.
It's not a replacement for running water, and it's not a replacement for, you know, fresh water in the kitchen. So basically what we use it for is drinking and then boiling anything.
She lives in Gustavus, a small southeast community of around 400 people. About a dozen households have wells contaminated by PFAS. It's a family of man-made chemicals that for decades were used in everything from nonstick frying pans to flame retardant foam for putting out jet fuel fires. And now it's in the drinking water of at least 9 communities in Alaska. McLaughlin is troubled that her toddler drinks the bath water and is tall enough to reach the tap when she's thirsty. She's too little to know better.
I mean, I don't know how to explain that. How do you say that? to a two-year-old, you know. You can't taste it, but it's really gross. It's bad water. You know, I don't know.
The health effects of PFAS are still being understood, but numerous studies show links to cancer, reproductive problems, and effects on the immune system. Much of Alaska's PFAS contamination is linked to a flame retardant foam used by firefighters around airports and on military bases. When PFAS was detected last fall in Gustavus, McLaughlin was critical of the Walker administration's approach, but she says agency staff did their best. Then leadership at state agencies changed following the election of Governor Mike Dunleavy.
And there's definitely major lockdown. People that I could call and ask information before now have to send it up the chain of command, and then I don't even often get it.
So what happened? Well, first, the state's Department of Environmental Conservation quietly rolled back its PFAS regulations in April. It was testing for 6 compounds. Now it only tests for 2. That brings Alaska in line with the Trump administration's EPA. DEC Commissioner Jason Bruni defended the move to skeptical House lawmakers, who had concerns about whether the EPA's standards are strict enough.
I absolutely understand that concern. I have staff that have a very similar concern as well. I also have staff that are of the opinion we should be going with what the EPA is doing.
Bruni's reference to divided opinion among his staff followed the leak of an internal memo written by a senior state scientist objecting to the rollback. Sally Schlichting, a DEC policy analyst responsible for drafting regulations, wrote that, as a science-based agency, we must use a science-based approach to set standards, unquote. In her memo, she charged that the state was ignoring the advice of its own environmental and public health experts on PFAS. So if not science, what was behind the change? Journalist Dermot Cole filed a public records request in April to try and find out.
I wanted to see how much of a political decision this was.
A month later, he received a ream of emails, almost completely redacted, between the governor's top political staff and agency commissioners. The emails were mostly blank, but from the headers, it was evident that the governor's chief of staff, Tuckerman Babcock, former head of Alaska's Republican Party, was directing revisions for the state's allowable PFAS limits in drinking water. Governor Dunleavy's press secretary, Matt Shakaro, says there isn't anything unusual about regulations being reviewed by the governor's top aides.
This is an issue that crosses multiple agencies, and it's imperative that we get as much input from commissioners, from their staff, to get the best advice and the best guidance.
He wouldn't address why the email contents were blanked out. Frustrated by the lack of transparency, Cole wrote about his findings on his blog last month.
I think it's a mockery of the public process. It may be a legal one, but it's a mockery of the public process to release a bunch of emails that basically say hello and goodbye, and everything else is kept secret.
To be clear, withholding the content of these emails is legal. Alaska's public records law has broad exemptions. Now, going back to the idea that the EPA's PFAS standards fall short, the Dunleavy administration's decision to rely on them has its critics. David Andrews is a chemist with Environmental Working Group in D.C. He says EPA's action plan doesn't deliver.
There's no explicit timeline. There's no definitive actions. They've really essentially deferred decision-making a little bit further down the line.
Alaska Senator Lisa Murkowski is among 31 co-sponsors of a bill that would force the EPA's hand. It would compel the federal government to declare all PFAS chemicals hazardous substances within a year. Andrews says it's a critical piece of legislation.
It really initiates the cleanup process and requires contaminated sites to be addressed.
Back in Gustavus, Kelly McLaughlin says she has jars of last year's bear meat she'd unwittingly canned with PFAS-contaminated tap water.
I mean, it's poison, so I don't know what to do with it. It's just sitting on my kitchen counter still, so I don't know where to get rid of it.
Reporting in Juneau, I'm Jacob Resnick.
Thank you for listening to KYUK News. Please send any news tips to news@kyuk.org.
And stay tuned for news in Yukden coming up next.